Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Monday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, those blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, but stop by there any day of the week just, you know, to see what's going on. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, you can find Dan and I on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at? Yeah, I was afraid that happened. Okay, let's try one more time. We have to put Dan back on hold because I tried to bring him in while the music was playing, and for some reason that always doesn't work. All right, take two. Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man with three.
There we go. For whatever reason, I don't understand why it does that if I try to bring you into the podcast when the music's playing. It's like you can't do two things at once. It's like me. So, you know, I guess it's just one of those things. But all right, well, interestingly, Dan, I saw that I'm under the impression now that the Raiders are just mailing this season in their first one after giving John Gruden a 10-year, $100 million contract. First, they put Marshawn Lynch on injured reserve, so he's going to be out, you know, a number of weeks. I forgot what the number is now with the NFL. But then they announced that they've traded Amari Cooper to the Dallas Cowboys for a first-round pick. So now the Raiders collected draft picks here. You know, they got two from the Bears for Khalil Mack. Now they got a third one from the Cowboys for Cooper. You know, this is kind of like the baseball equivalent of rebuilding, right, what the Raiders are doing here?
Well, that's what I was going to say to you. And while next week will suck for me, what does that mean going from week 9 forward since I have Dak Prescott?
Well, you know, in reality, it should be a gigantic upgrade for the Dallas receiving core. We're talking about a team that, with the exception of, oddly, that one week against Jacksonville, who everybody thought had a really good defense, they haven't produced. I mean, coming into this year, I was really questioning their receiving core, but, you know, again, Mr. Fantasy was on this guy by the name of Michael Gallup, and I believe he's pretty much stuck as much as any of the other receivers. So they need a Cooper. They don't have a big-time number one target. So the weird thing is, like, for Dak, I believe this is going to be a much better situation. But if you're Amari Cooper owners, you may be hurt in the short term because it's going to take him multiple weeks to get acclimated to the Cowboy offense. So we'll have to see how that ends up playing out. But I guess if Dallas thinks they're a playoff team, this is a great ad because it's a gigantic upgrade. And I mean, you know, number one draft picks can be hit or miss as it is. So it's, you know, give one up and let the Raiders screw it up instead of you, I guess. You know, we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, I don't know, Dan, if you're Las Vegas, how are you feeling? Because, you know, the Raiders are a couple years away from going there, I believe. Ooh. I mean, are you as excited about getting this team now as you were? Because, you know, I don't know if they'll win another game this season. And, you know, if they bring in, even if they get three top draft picks, it's going to take a little while for these guys to develop. You know, how concerned are you if you're Las Vegas with this team rolling in now?
You know, I guess that's the one thing I did not even think about when I saw that trade. You know, I was all excited because I figured that would help my fantasy team continue to get better since I'm going to beat the, I think, the only team in the league that hasn't lost the game.
Oh, good.
I didn't even think about what that means to Vegas. And, you know, my brother-in-law and I were talking about this over the weekend, and I didn't know if you had the answer to this. And, you know, I think these kind of go together is, you know, when the Rams moved to L.A., their season ticket holders were still offered the opportunity to purchase their tickets. Is that the same for the Raider fans?
You know, I can't see why it wouldn't be. I haven't looked into it or heard anything about it yet, but, you know, the Rams, obviously, a little tougher trip. St. Louis to Los Angeles, a little rougher trip. I could see, you know, quite a few of those Oakland people jumping on that and, you know, continuing to carry their tickets. They do have that's the one thing about the Raiders is they have a really strong fan base. So that could be interesting.
Yeah, and like you said, the stadium is supposed to be open in 2020. You know, I was trying to find a little something on it, but, you know, many of the articles I'm finding are from 2017 when they made the announcement.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't even know, you know, what kind of possible ramifications it could have there for Vegas or how they're feeling, because obviously they're spending quite a bit of money to put up a new stadium and, you know, bring that team in, but I guess they're still going to draw, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like you always say, it's the NFL, and it's the Raiders franchise. It's, you know, and I don't mean to knock any of the other franchises, but it's, you know, it's not the Jaguars.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's terrible that you pick on Jaguars like that.
Well, I'm just mad because Blake Bortles flaked out this weekend.
Yes, he sure did. He got himself benched. So, but they did say he will start next week.
And guess who my backup quarterback is?
Derek Carr. This is definitely a bad deal for Derek Carr. You know, he's the one going to get the short end of the stick here out of all this. You know, he loses a big time receiver, and you know, then Marshawn Lynch went on IR, you know, as well. So the running game is going to take a little bit of a hit. I don't think it's any fun to be Derek Carr right now.
I mean, was Marshawn Lynch really making that any kind of impact on the team? I didn't even realize he still played.
You know, I believe he was scoring about a touchdown a game for them until he got hurt. So, you know, he kind of gave them that option where you at least had to pay attention to the running game. You know, now I don't know, you know, if you have to do all that much with their running game now. You know, I can't even name you as backup, except I know Jalen Richards will get some time. I don't know who's going to get the majority of the carries there. So, yeah, you know, who knows? Oh, so now there are apparently quite a few teams shopping. You know, I read that the Eagles are in the market for a wide receiver, and they did make an offer for Cooper. But obviously, you know, you would rather have the Cowboys number one because that's going to come up before the Eagles number one. Because you got to assume that the Eagles will probably finish ahead of the Cowboys in the standings. Of course, you know, with the way they played in Carolina yesterday, who the hell knows what's going on in the NFL anymore? It's just so weird. But I saw today that Patrick Peterson has told the Cardinals he wants to be traded before the deadline. The team has came out and said they're not going to do it, but Dan, we know these things kind of have a way of happening. You know, he's still a top-flight cornerback in the NFL, so you got to figure he's going to be a pretty popular trade candidate. Since they seem to be on other hot sides here, you see him getting traded? They eventually work something out and he gets traded?
I think so.
So, you know, and then, of course, the news that comes out every week, it's already been reported that Le'Veon Bell will not report this week. No surprise, I don't expect to see him till like week 11 or whatever when he absolutely positively has to report. Otherwise, I wouldn't expect him there. Do you expect him anytime before that?
No, I don't. And the way James Conner's been playing, I don't want him to play.
Yeah, so, you know, then the other football thing, I've got to ask you about this because I know you're a Blake Bortles guy. Not quite as big on Jacksonville as you were on Minnesota, but you're still a Blake Bortles guy. Now, I'm seeing a couple analysts come out. I believe Chris Carter was one, and the term he used was the Jaguars need to swallow their pride and hire Colin Kaepernick. Is that the route they need to go?
I mean, obviously I haven't really seen any games, but you know, he seems to produce pretty well. He does have a couple of shakeups, but I mean, there's quarterbacks in this league who have posted, you know, 30 plus points in a fantasy league, and then the next week posted negative. So
yeah,
I mean, I think the hard part with him is he's been wildly inconsistent. You know,
yeah,
three
you know,
three,
I knew,
technically.
You know, you do have to wonder at this point, don't you, how much rust is on him? The next stop will be Hope for. You know, because when he's taken two seasons?
Yeah, and you can't tell me he's out there, you know, running football drills and doing all that stuff.
Yeah, and you know, and even so, I mean, it's different with, you know, what he would be doing in a field with some buddies, or you know, even if you went back to his college team, you know, that's a whole different scenario than what it's going to be like in the NFL. So, I'm not sure of. I think right now that would be my biggest question with him, especially bringing him in the middle of the season, is how long would it take him to get ready? You know, because, like, even if you signed him, say you signed him today and you had the entire week, I still don't think he could play on Sunday. And, you know, would it be 2 weeks, 3 weeks? You know, at this point, how long would it take him to be football ready before, you know, he would be useful to a team?
Yeah, I mean, with the amount of money that they're paying Bortles this year, that's pretty much the entire year is guaranteed.
Yeah, and he signed an extension last offseason, didn't he, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, but it looks like it's only through 2021. But there's a potential out after 2020. But, you know, the thing is he's getting $10 million this year and then $21 million next year, and that's all guaranteed.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's not like the Bears with, now I can't even think of his name.
The Biscuit?
That's where you've been at. No, the guy before him.
Oh, Mike Glennon?
Yeah, they, you know, it's not like Bears with Glennon where they only had to pay like a couple million this season. You know, if the Jaguars decided to just sit Bortles for the rest of the year, I mean, would Kaepernick be willing to pay for $100 a game for this season and next season? I don't think so. So, you know, when you've got to pay a guy basically $26.5 million for this season and next season, there's no way around it. You know, their cap hit in 2020 is $23 million. So I still don't understand how the NFL contracts work with the cap and the dead cap, but I mean, to me, that says a lot of money.
Yeah, that is. So
I mean, what would you be able to do? You can only go with your backup who's potentially getting paid whatever league minimum is or rookie contract pay, right? When you owe a guy this much money, there is no signing Colin Kaepernick or, Jay Cutler or anybody who's made a name for himself, even if it's not that big. You know, they couldn't even sign Blake Osweiler.
Yeah, and he's being paid by somebody else. So.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, the Jaguars are pretty much, that's it. They're stuck where they are.
Yeah. Oh, well, they'll just have to live with it. Maybe if they get Leonard Fournette healthy, you know, they'll be a little better team. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to back up. But, all right, let's shift gears here, Dan. We had a couple managerial hirings here before the World Series started. The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim have decided to recycle Brad Ausmus. I believe he's a former Astro and manager, so he'll be getting that job there. And then David Bell, he fits into that Buddy Bell lineage of family there. He was hired as the manager of the Cincinnati Reds. I don't know. You excited about either of these hirings?
I don't know. I mean, to me, it's become the way of where the managerial signing has almost, you know, is it even really part of the radar anymore? Is it even worth talking about anymore? When you've got to wonder about who's in the front office trying to control everything.
Yeah, I guess, you know, a lot of that, depends on, you know, who you are and what you're working with. So, I don't know much about bringing Ausmus back. I'm trying to remember. I'm going to have to Bing him here to see what kind of success he had, because I vaguely remember him having some success with the Tigers. I thought when they were a pretty good team. But I don't know off the top of my head, so let me figure it out here. Well, he did end up – actually, he didn't manage the Astros. I was wrong there. He was in Detroit from 2014 to 2017. He was 314 and 332. It looked like they made one playoff appearance and they were swept. So he lost all three playoff games. So that's, yeah. That's where that went for Ausmus. So yeah, that's where he, that's where they went. Again, I don't know if, you know, not really an exciting hire, is it?
Not really. And I'm on Baseball Reference, and I got his player stats, so I couldn't catch up with you as quickly.
So, sorry, yeah, I just...
Yeah, I mean,
I mean,
he played from 93 to 2010 and made approximately $36 million over that time period.
Yeah,
so.
He was a quality backup catcher. He hung around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know he was a starter for a short period of time, but I don't remember him really as a great hitter. But, yeah, he was a solid defensive guy and, you know, a good he handled the staff really well. So.
Well, you know, I mean, that's one of the things, being a catcher. They always say that, you know, you guys are, you know, in control of the game and really have a better understanding of the game, you know, the way you would play it on a chessboard, so to speak. So they usually make great, you know, good managers.
Yeah, normally, you know. He's taking over, I mean, kind of an enigmatic team, right? I mean, you have the best player in the game in Trout. You have the second best player in the game in Ohtani. You know, and then, you know, you got guys like Upton hanging around, you know, obviously an aging Albert Pujols. You know, I mean, all in all, it's a pretty solid team, but you think he's the guy to get the job done? Does he get him past Houston in that division?
Before last weekend, I would say no. But, you know, now I kind of think anything's possible. You know, obviously Ohtani's not going to pitch next year, but I think if they can grab a couple pitchers.
Yeah, but he'll hit 50 bombs.
Yeah.
You know, he can play
but, you know,
DH now. He'll probably break the home run record, won't he? He'll hit 80,
right? Oh, he
right?
should.
Yeah.
77. No, but I mean, if I think with a couple quality pitchers, they could turn it around. You know, imagine if they were to land Keuchel somehow next season.
Well, you know, they got the money. You know, Artie Moreno's got money out mm-hmm. there. It just depends on – he spent it poorly quite a few times. You know, we can go back to the Josh Hamilton signing or the C.J. Wilson signing. You know, the Wilson signing just ended up turning out to be bad because he kept getting hurt. When he was signed,
yeah,
that looked
mean,
like a pretty big deal. You know, nobody knew what the hell they were doing giving Hamilton all that money. So, yeah, you know, maybe, you know, they've had the young guys now on the mound for a long time. And as you know, because you always seem to end up with them in fantasy, all they do is get hurt. You know, Garrett Richards has been hurt. Matt Shoemaker's been hurt. I'm drawing a blank on one of the other names that's always hurt that was supposed to be a big guy for him. Who I actually think is a freak this year. After all the years of banging around over there, that might be Garrett Richards who's the free agent. But, you know, you always hear, well, the Angels have this young up-and-coming pitching staff, and then by, you know, by May, they're all on IR.
Yeah, well, not this past season. The season before, they all, I feel like, started on the IR, and then I was able to pick them up midway through the season.
So,
had the entire – Angels rotation that one year, and they were actually doing pretty well post All-Star break.
So yeah, we'll see what Ausmus does there, and then with David Bell, this is his first major league managerial job. He spent 3 years with the Carolina Mudcats in the Reds AA organization. Then he spent a year with the Louisville Bats, which is the Reds' AAA organization. I don't remember this one, Dan, but in 2012, he was actually the Cubs' third base coach. Then in 2013, the Cardinals hired him as the assistant hitting coach. He was there till 2017 when he actually left to become the Giants' vice president of player development. So he's done a little coaching at the major league level, no managing, just in the minors, and he's been in the front office a little. He got a 3-year deal with a 4-year option. He played from 95 to 2006. He bounced around quite a bit. It was Indians, Cardinals, Indians, Mariners, Giants, Phillies, and he ended up with the Brewers. But he, you know, he's 46, and again, you know, I mentioned he comes from a lineage of baseball. You know, Buddy Bell was a big-time quality player. Some would even say borderline Hall of Famer. I believe his grandfather is Gus Bell, who was a major league player as well. So there's a little family heritage there. I don't know what that'll mean for, you know, for being a manager, but at least he's got that going for him. You think it was a good move for them to go outside of the box and hire a guy with no major league experience?
Well, first of all, the other pitcher in Anaheim was Andrew Haney. That's the guy you're looking for.
Thank you. But, yes, I couldn't remember that one.
I mean, I think with a team like the Reds, got to go outside the box and look for a guy who's going to help develop almost like a Ricky Renteria, no?
Yeah, you know, at this point, I mean, the Reds are what? They're 3 or 4 years into that rebuild, and it doesn't look like they're actually close to being ready to contend, do they?
You know, even with the way the Pirates played last year, they still kept in it. And, you know, when you're trying to compete with the Cubs, the Cardinals, the Pirates, and the Brewers, I think they're still a few years away from, you know, knocking one of these four teams completely down to the bottom.
You know, to be fair, that may be the Reds' biggest problem, right, is that division is, you know, not a lot of people talk about it, but it could actually be the toughest in baseball. You know, I know everybody's going to jump up and down and start talking about the AL East, but besides the Yankees and the Red Sox, I don't think anybody's worried about any other team in that division. I know Tampa played well this year, but they don't scare anybody. You know, the AL West was pretty good. You had the Astros and A's in, but, you know, the Mariners choked it off there in the end, let's face it, as much as I hate to say it. You know, but, yeah, I mean, give me a division that has four teams like the Cubs, the Brewers, the Cardinals, and you throw the Pirates in there because they did hang on and contend for a while. So, you know, that could possibly be, you know, the Reds' biggest stumbling point is just the fact that they're, you know, they're going to figure out how the heck to get out of their own, you know, their own division. You know, and I mean, obviously, you know, you could sit and point and talk about other, you know, other issues they have. I mean, obviously they need pitching, but what team in baseball doesn't need pitching? So, you know, that's just,
yeah,
just kind of how these things go.
Well, the downside, I think, for the Reds, and, you know, there's nothing you could do about it, the loss of Jay Bruce, Todd Frazier, you know, even going back as far as Aroldis Chapman, you know, unfortunately, you know, once that game where Johnny Cueto, you know, threw a pitch that's off the mound and that ended his, you know, playoff season with the Reds. I mean, the Reds haven't really competed when that was 2012. And I think the way things have gone, the Reds have turned themselves off from being some sort of destination for free agents. Do you kind of feel that way too?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, why would you sign there? You know, I mean, they're, you know, especially if you wanted to contend, you know, you kind of look at it and you're like, yeah, you know, what's my reasoning for, you know, for kind of jumping on this team? And, you know, oddly, you know, offensively, they're not a bad team. You know, obviously, you know, Votto is one of the top bats still. You know, Scooter Jeanette has been huge with the Reds. You know,
yeah.
Peraza's got a good little bat, and I think Suarez is kind of surprising. You know, Billy Hamilton's been a little disappointing, but there were a lot of people who thought this is what he would hit at the major league level. So we're kind of right there. You know, I know they're high on Philip Irvin. We got to see a little more of him. And then Scott Schebler is, you know, I want to say solid, but not spectacular. But, you know, when you get into this pitching, here's what they list as their five-man rotation. Anthony DeSclafani, Matt Harvey, Luis Castillo, Corey Reed, and I believe it's Tyler Molly. Does that intimidate you at all?
Is that a real question or a rhetorical?
A little of both. Castillo looked like an up-and-comer, but, you know, and Harvey's a free agent, so there's no guarantee he's even going to be back with this team. He did say he would be willing to sign with any team except the Mets. I left out catching, where they had a platoon of Tucker Barnhart and Kirk Cassilly. That may be their weakest spot on offense. They do have a really top-notch closer in Raisel Iglesias. The problem, of course, is getting him the damn ball. For some reason, they don't have Homer Bailey listed in the rotation, and I think he's still signed for a few more years. Remember, he got like that 6-year, $100 million deal? That's only 2 or 3 years old, so he's going to be hanging around the Reds for a while, whether they like it or not. Obviously, Dan, I guess we can point to pitching as the weakness, huh? So they're, looking for probably starting pitching. Let me see if I can hunt down over any of their top prospects. Maybe they have a top pitching prospect we don't know about, Dan. Here we go. Top 30 prospects. Who are the Reds' top 30 prospects? No. And, of course, the other question is how far away are they, because they like to, here you go. We do have Hunter Green, Dan. He's listed as their number 2 prospect. He spent the year in A-ball. He's the guy they were trying to decide if he was going to be a shortstop or a pitcher. He's all in 19, so there's no rush there. Their next pitcher is at number 5. Got quite the mustache on him. 21-year-old Tony Santillan. He spent some time in high A and then finished the year in double A. So he's probably still a little bit away. Who's next? Do we got a guy? We do have a guy at 12 who actually pitched in triple A this year, Dan. 25-year-old Curry Mella. He made 16 starts in double A. He made 5 starts in triple A and had some good success. 2-1 with a 2.74 ERA. The interesting thing, Dan, though, is in those 5 starts, he only went 23 innings. So not even averaging 4 innings a start. Welcome to the new wave of baseball, huh? It even happens in the minors.
Which is where it shouldn't happen.
No, that's where you should be being taught how to finish games and throw innings. But sadly, no more. That is not the way to do it. Their 13th ranked prospect is a pitcher, but he's a reliever, Dan, so I don't know how much help he'll be. Jimmy Hergett threw 50 games for AAA Louisville, 1-3, 3.47 ERA out of the bullpen. So those are some of their top guys. I mean, it looks like maybe Mella could have a shot at the rotation next year, but if he's only going out there giving you 4 innings, who cares, right?
Exactly.
So we'll see. So, yeah, it does, while they have the flashy new first-time manager and stuff, it doesn't look like the Reds are going to be contenders here for, let's say, a while. Because that's what we're going with. I don't believe they will contend for a while, unless you think they will.
Depends on what you mean by a while. I guess my question to you, and I know you don't have it in front of you throwing it out there, but what did they get for their trades?
Of who?
I think Bruce, Mesoraco. I think there was another one, right? Frazier?
Well, they got Holden for Mesoraco. That was that trade. If you give me a second, I can tell you what they got for Jay Bruce here. Let's see. He was traded to the New York Mets for Max Wotel and Dilson Herrera. Herrera played a little bit this year. You may have seen him. I don't know. I don't know much about Wotel. He is a left-handed pitcher who split the year between A-ball and rookie league, only pitched in 9 games. So I don't know if he was hurt or what, but he's 22 years old. And, yeah, he's never pitched higher than Class A. So, and then, yeah, Herrera, I can tell you, where did I, oh, I went away from it. Come on, where'd it go? Dilson Herrera, where are you? There you are. Herrera played in 53 games for the Reds. He hit .184, Dan, with 5 home runs and 11 RBIs. So there you go. That's what they got for Jay Bruce. Are you thinking they didn't get enough? Is that what you're thinking, or?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what I was thinking.
They just did not do a nice job of scouting, maybe, and that kind of hurt them. So, but you know and obviously that's part of the deal when you rebuild. If you're going to make those trades, you got to make good trades. So. You know, just how it goes. But all right, Dan, let's roll into it. You know, we're starting off tomorrow night, obviously. The World Series. We're gonna obviously start in Boston. It's gonna be a little chilly. I believe we're getting Chris Sale against Clayton Kershaw. I know there was some questions about Kershaw actually not making the game one start because he pitched. He threw 16 pitches in Game 7, but Kershaw's making the start, right?
Most definitely.
So, and, you know, I meant to ask you, Dan, are we doing the T-shirt thing for the World Series? I know we normally don't.
We might as well. But who gets to pick?
Well, I did win last time, so does that mean I get to pick, or?
Are we going based off the hockey, or?
We normally just went based off the last one, but we can do either or. We can do football or hockey because luckily I did end up winning both of them.
Okay, you
had to go with New England because you picked them in the preseason, and then I still don't know why you went against the Capitals. I'm trying to remember that one, but I was thankful for that.
Well, so, It worked out. Well, I didn't have a choice. That's because I picked Nashville the prior year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, but, you go ahead and pick because I think I know who you're going to pick, and I want the other team anyway. So I will allow you to pick. Why don't we do it tomorrow at the start of the podcast? You can tell us who you're picking.
All right, all right. Okay.
I wanted to get into this, Dan, because I want to get your breakdown compared to the breakdown here of, let me get this gentleman's name, Mike Fitzpatrick, who is an AP baseball writer. So we're going position by position, Dan. We start at first base where the Dodgers have David Freese or Max Muncy, and the Red Sox, of course, have Steve Pearce and Mitch Moreland. Who you give the advantage to at first base, Dan?
Dodgers.
Oh, that's interesting. He went with the Dodgers, too. Do you have it close? Because he has it very close. Do you have it that close, or do you think it's more of a side for the Dodgers? Because, you know, Muncy did hit 35 bombs this year kind of out of the blue.
He's kind of coming out of the blue, like you said, and that's kind of what pushed me more towards that way. I know Steve Pearce has been, you know, pretty consistent with that team, you know, and kind of a surprise. But when it comes to Mitch Moreland, while you can get your bombs out of him, I think he is what takes it away from the Red Sox and gives it to the Dodgers.
And I think Moreland is the best defender of the four, but, you know, that just we'll see. All right, we move over to second base now. They go with Brian Dozier as the main guy, but they do add in our guy Kiki and Muncy again at second base for the Dodgers, of course. For the Red Sox, they actually go straight up Ian Kinsler or Brock Holt. Who you buy in as the better second base tandem here, I guess?
I kind of lean with the Red Sox, but and I think it's more because Roberts doesn't seem to go with one guy. You know, I would think that Dozier would be more of a secure starter, and it doesn't seem to be that way.
Well, you know, the tough part is he just hasn't hit. You know, neither
yeah.
is Kiki. That's the problem they're having. I think, you know, Dozier's hitting 182 and Kiki's hitting 115 in the playoffs. So it's been a scuffle. You know, and Holt obviously, you know, became famous right away for hitting the cycle against the Yankees. And, he has the edge for the Red Sox as well. So far you're right on. Now, this one I think is going to be tough here. You know, we go to shortstop. Obviously, you know, it's Manny Machado for the Dodgers. You know, they list him as, you know, one of the best players in the game. He's going to be paid a bazillion dollars this offseason. You know, but the Red Sox guy is no slouch. I don't know if Xander Bogaerts is going to quite get his due here. You know, he's been the Red Sox leadoff hitter. You know, he drove in 100 runs in the regular season with this powerhouse lineup. You know, I think it's probably a little closer than what a lot of people think, but who you giving the edge to at shortstop?
I think the edge definitely goes to Machado and the Dodgers, or Dodgers and Machado. But you know, like you said, Sanders no slouch and been a huge producer for this team.
Can we start calling him the villain Manny Machado after all the stuff that's going on with him? So
hey, why not? I don't know.
He needs to grow it.
Well, we'll talk about it. Or something. I think his contract could be worth more than what it should be, though.
Probably. So, all right. Well, let's hit up third base here. Well, we start with Dodgers. You know, we know when Justin Turner's healthy, he's one of those guys you want at the plate in any and every situation. You know, he's the Dodgers guy, and he actually has, through his career, he's hit .310 in the postseason with 7 bombs, 30 RBI, so he's clutch. The Red Sox counter with the tag team of Eduardo Nunez or Rafael Devers. You know, Nunez is the right-handed part. Devers is the lefty part with, I believe, a little more power. Just 22 is Devers, but they have a few defensive issues. You know, to me, Dan, this looked like it was the biggest advantage for one team at a position. Are you on board there? Who'd you go with?
I mean, of course I want to go with Turner, but I feel like with the opportunities that Devers has had at the plate kind of almost makes them gives them a tie.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Turner is just too good. You know, at this point to be that way. But, I could see it, you know, if you're buying the young guy and if he plays enough, you know, that's always the difficult thing. But, all right, well, let's move to catcher. As you know, the Dodgers made the switch. It's no longer Yasmani Grandal. His bat is on the bench for them now. So they're going with Austin Barnes. Oddly, the second year in a row he's had to take over for Grandal. The Red Sox catching tandem is Christian Vasquez and Sandy Leon, even though I think Vasquez has been getting a little more playing time. We'll see how that goes in game one because I know Leon has been Sale's kind of personal catcher. What duo you like better and why?
I'll be honest, since we really can't go straight up because 2018, and that's not how the game is played anymore, one-on-one. I'm going with Boston. You know, if the Dodgers need to bring in Yasmani Grandal, behind the plate, you've just, you know, the way he's performed in the playoffs, behind the plate, I don't, you know, who cares about his bat? He could potentially lose a game for you.
Yeah.
So I think this one is a huge advantage to the Red Sox.
Yeah, and I know I didn't mention it before, but this guy picked Tate Turner at third base. He kind of wusses out here and calls this an even matchup. I don't know how he sees this as even, because he doesn't explain his rankings. He just tells you what they are. I would love to know how he came up with that as an even matchup. Maybe I'll have to email him and ask him or hit him up on Twitter. All right, we go to the outfield, and where we start in left field, the Dodgers are going, they're using Chris Taylor and or Jock Peterson, and they're up against a tough matchup here. Andrew Benintendi for the Red Sox. So who you on here? You like the tag team, or is Benintendi good enough solo that you're going to ride with him?
I think this one goes to the Dodgers.
Oh, okay. How did you? I'm interested to know how you came that way.
Well, you know, you've got the two guys, and I think they could cover both sides of the plate pretty well. So, give it up to them. But you know, maybe if it were, I don't know. I think because I watched a little bit of Benintendi, and while his star is on the rise, I don't think it's fully there yet.
So yeah, this is the first one you've been on the opposite end here. He went with the Red Sox here. I kind of thought that's where you're going to go. I was a little surprised by that pick. So let's go ahead and move ourselves into center field. Of course, the Dodgers go with Cody Bellinger. You know, he's coming off the big NLCS where he was named MVP. He goes up against Jackie Bradley Jr., who, you know, is pretty much known for his defense, but did have a couple really big home runs for the Red Sox against the Astros. Who you like here?
You know, I'd rather, much rather go with the Dodgers, but, you know, because Bradley, his offense just, you know, I don't know if that was this season starting off with the flu, or if that was last season, I can't remember exactly, but, you know, I had him on my team, and, you know, somewhere in the season, offensively, I just dropped him. No trades, no nothing. Just a straight drop, and, you know, in that sense, that's where I think the Dodgers kind of take over. And I think you'll get more consistency on their side.
It's an interesting setup. You know, obviously Bradley is the better defender, but Bellinger's no slouch as a defender out there, but he's far more a better offensive threat than Bradley is. So, all right, let's move over to right field, and this one may break my heart here, but, of course, the Dodgers have Yasiel Puig, who you know I love regardless of all the inconsistencies and whatever idiocy he pulls, but sadly his matchup is against Mookie Betts, who's probably the American League MVP. Sorry, Mike Trout fans. Betts deserves it, and you all damn well know it. Who you going with here, Dan?
You know, if anyone can compare to the level of play or love, whatever you want to call it, of Javi Baez, it's definitely Yasiel Puig. And I wonder if that's what makes you and I like him so much. But, I mean, you just – I don't think anyone this season is really matching up against Mookie.
No, except for maybe his teammate, who we'll get to next. So, yeah, just a tough matchup there for Puig. I think that kind of sucked because, you know, I actually think he's better than a lot of people do. And I'm still telling you, if I'm the Marlins this offseason, I'm bringing him in and making him the centerpiece of my freaking Latin community as a Cuban player. You know, I think that would be everything they need to do, but they're probably not smart enough to do that, and I know I'm off track. All right, Dan, since we will play some games in Boston, the designated hitter applies. The Dodgers, they're going to plug in Matt Kemp and Max Muncy. You know, Kemp didn't get a ton of at-bats this postseason. I was a little surprised after the year he had. Another tough matchup for the Dodgers, though, is, you know, they're going up against JD, Martinez, 330, 43 bombs, 130 RBIs, led the major leagues. Oh, I don't know. It's difficult here to swing the bat, but did the Dodgers stand up a little here?
No. I mean, if we're just going one-on-one, it's definitely the Red Sox category to take over.
So let's see. So that's three Red Sox there. Four. You know, surprisingly, he didn't do pitching. Oh, here we go. I found pitching. All right. So it looks like position-wise, you have four for the Red Sox and three for the Dodgers. Or four and four. Okay, look at that. We're even. So we move into starting pitching, where, of course, they're going with four guys for the Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw, Walker Buehler, Hyun-Jin Ryu, and they add Rich Hill in with this one. For the Red Sox, they match them up against Chris Sale, David Price, Nathan Eovaldi, and Rick Porcello. How do you see this going 4-on-4 here? Who's got the better group?
I think I'd give the slight edge to the Dodgers.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because I was looking at this and I was really kind of leaning to the Dodgers. I thought not so much slight. I really thought they had the edge. You were just kind of slight, and then looking at his, he likes the Red Sox. So I don't know.
I mean,
is he going off the fact that Price finally had a really good start? Did that swing things for everybody?
I think that's pretty much what happened, because, I mean, it was one great game. And that game is what – I mean, that's – and I would have liked to have seen him gone another inning, but, you know, maybe – what's his name? Cora was safe and taking him out. But, you know, that's the guy that the Blue Jays wanted. You know, that's the guy the Blue Jays thought that they were getting. So – but, I mean, it was one game, and while I'm not, you know, wishing any negative on any of these guys, because I hope for a great World Series, but I still think the edge goes for the Dodgers.
Yeah, so did I. I was really surprised that he went the other way. All right, we get into the bullpen where, you know, we have a couple stud closers. The Dodgers, of course, is Kenley Jansen. You know, the setup guys, we've seen Pedro Baez, Ryan Matson, Dylan Florio, Caleb Ferguson. But don't forget, they also have Kenta Maeda, Alex Wood, Julio Urias in the bullpen, where, you know, the Red Sox go with their big-time closer is Craig Kimbrell. Then they have guys like Matt Barnes and Joe Kelly, who throw about 200 miles an hour. Ryan Brazier has really popped up with some good stuff in the playoffs. And then, of course, Eduardo Rodriguez is their starter in the bullpen if they need multiple innings. Who's got the better bullpen?
I think that this one goes to the Red Sox, especially with the fact that I feel like they haven't been gassed as much as the Dodgers bullpen trying to match up with what the Brewers are doing.
Yeah. So, interestingly, he goes with the Dodgers in this one.
Huh.
So you were the exact opposite of pitching. That was a little bit of a surprise. Now he's going with the Red Sox in six. Of course, like I said, we'll get Dan's pick tomorrow. So you'll have to tune in at the start of the podcast, and we'll see who Dan's going with. But yeah, it looks like you got a pretty even matchup. You expecting a good World Series?
Yeah, I mean, of course, for my team, I'd love to see it end in four. You know, in Los Angeles. But I think with the way these two teams have been playing, I think it's going to go possibly seven.
I got a feeling we're going to get a long series out of this. But I saw something interesting here, Dan, and I'm wondering if this would be something the Red Sox would even try. Now, obviously, they're going to have to go to L.A. for three games. which means there's no DH, so they might have to find a way to get J.D. Martinez's bat in the lineup. Do you think they would play Martinez in right field and move Mookie Betts to second, where he has played a little bit in his major league career? Could you see them doing something like that to get Betts and Martinez bat in the lineup at the same time?
That or not start Bradley, you put Mookie in center.
That's also a possibility. Obviously, they would lose a little defense, but yeah, I was just wondering if that could possibly be a move they would make, kind of out of, you know, a little bit out of the box, so to speak.
I don't know. I mean, he's no Jason Kipnis. Drum roll. that was a bad joke, I know. But,
yeah.
You know, it's definitely a possibility. But I think you'd maybe want to stick with that situation and moving him over to center and having Bradley coming off the bench. You know, because with Bradley coming off the bench in a situation with a couple men on, or even one man on, and you're looking to take out the pitcher and, you know, say the sixth or possibly, you know, fifth or sixth inning, you know, he might be the guy who's clutch. But, you know, either way, I think you could do that with he or JD. So it's one of those toss-ups. So it'll be interesting to see the way they go with it when they get to L.A. with those lineups. But I do have to say, with Kershaw throwing, you know, logging 16 pitches in a game, not to mention his warm-ups in the bullpen prior to coming in, which I thought was awesome to see him finish out that game the other night. I don't even see why that would be an issue for him coming in. Doesn't he just throw 16 less warm-up pitches?
Yeah, well, you know, the funny
the logic
thing is,
or the panic.
It was a throw day. It was what they call a throw day for him anyways. So he was going to throw the baseball one way or the other.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just don't understand the logic, panic, and wondering if that would disturb his, you know, his normal routine.
So, yeah, I don't think it would affect it at all. But you know how people are. You know how it is this time of year, Dan. They got to have something to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, so you just kind of, well, hey, look, he did this or he did that, and that's the way to you know, because otherwise it's, you know, it's just boring if you're like, hey, you know, if you just got to talk about Chris Sale's belly button infection or whatever he had.
Well, I guess you should write about that tomorrow morning. Is Chris Sale going to wear a belt?
Yes. So we'll have to see if that affects him. You know, I guess he can always go in their locker room and cut up the jerseys, right? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
That was my bad joke, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, that's always a good one.
But, yeah, we'll see it. We'll be, you know, I'm hoping it's a good series. That's, you know, kind of what I, you know, what I always hope for. And I would like it to go better, you know, like it to go longer because I'm actually off next week so I could watch games. So,
oh, nice.
You know. But, yeah, out of the 25 Expos, the Mickey Mouse Network poll, 20 of them went with the Red Sox to win it, and only five
with
the Dodgers. What a surprise there. And then, you know, obviously they pretty much got the matchup they wanted, right? I mean, they didn't want it, even though Houston would have been going for a repeat, they didn't want Houston-Milwaukee, did they?
No. I mean,
so I'm not even sure they want Houston-Milwaukee.
Probably not. I mean, you know, I think it would have been cool to see the rematch, but East versus West, it's gonna sell.
Yeah. So I'm going to be able to get a little bit more.
to